We will now look at what is function point analysis. Function point analysis is a methodology used by software companies to understand and estimate the time that is required to develop the software and thereby estimate the cost that will be incurred in developing a software solution or the cost that will be incurred in maintaining an existing software solution. Now, it is very useful in comparing and highlighting opportunities of productivity improvement in the software development process. It was developed by Mr. A.J. Albrecht of IBM Corporation in the 1980s. And this approach has been very popular compared to the other approach of measuring the size and therefore the time required to develop the software based on lines of code, number of lines of code, which has a number of inherent problems. Now, how is function point analysis done and what is the method of doing this function point analysis? Now, the first step is to start from the project design and the work breakdown structure specification, and the following system functions are measured or counted. So what is counted? The first thing that is counted is the typically it is the external inputs, then we have the external outputs, then we count the total number of files, we count the total number of inquiries, and we look at the total number of interfaces. So there are five things that are counted: external inputs, external outputs, files, inquiries, and interfaces. Then the second step is, using these counts, we arrive at what is called the processing complexity by assigning what are called complexity factors as under. So for example, if the there is no influence on the complexity, 0, if it is insignificant, 1, if it is moderate, it is 2, if it is average, it is 3, and if it is significant, 4, and it has a uniformly strong influence on the complexity, then it is 5. Okay. Now, in this also, we have complexity measures which are classified as simple, average, and complex. Now, look at this chart on your screen right now. Now, this is giving you a complete function point analysis based on program classification of simple, average, and complex. So, let us say, for example, we have a description of external inputs. We have external inputs simple as 1 into 3, then average is 7 into 4, and complex is 0 into 6. So we have 31 over here. Then external outputs, we have 3 into 4, 5 into 5, and 3 into 7, which is 58. So four different areas and the number of files. Inquiries are 4 into 3, 1 into 4, and 0 into 6, giving you 16. Master files and databases, simple are 10 into 7, average is 1 into 10, and complex is 0 into 15. Okay, so this gives us 80. And external interfaces are 1 into 5, average is 1 into 7, complex is 0 into 10, giving us 12. So we sum up all this, we are getting total unadjusted function points of 197. Now, the step number 3 is to calculate the adjusted process complexity as under, which is PCA equal to 0.65 plus 0.01 into PC. Now, if you take 0.05, now PCA, where PCA is the process complexity adjusted and PC is the process complexity non-adjusted. Then you take this number 0.65 plus 0.01 into 45, which gives us 1.1. Now, where does this number 45 come from? So 45 is the process complexity unadjusted. Okay. Now, to see how the process complexity has been determined, see the next. Let us see the next two slides. So, if you see the complexity factor, here is the complexity measure that has been given. Data communication, the complexity measure is 3. Heavily used configuration, the complexity measure is 4. Transaction rate, complexity measure is 4. end user efficiency 2, complex processing 2, installation ease 4, and multiple sites are 3. Now, if you use the processing complexity, if you add performance has 3 points, then distributed processing has 3, online data entry has 5, online update has 4, reusability has 2, operational ease is 5, extensibility is 1. So total processing complexity is 45, and this number 45 has come from the calculation that we have done on that slide. So if you see, this 45 has been derived from the next two slides, and so the coefficient over here is 0.65 plus 0.01 into 4.5, which actually gives you 1.1. So that's how we arrive at the adjusted process complexity. Now, once we have the adjusted process complexity in place, we have the total number of function points, which is 197, and we have the adjusted process complexity 1.1. So if you multiply 197 by 1.1, it will give you 216.7. Now, if 216.7 is the total number of function points, we have to convert this function point to an effort based on historical data or based on past data. Now, from past data, it has been estimated that roughly for every function point, it takes about, so if you take about 5 hours per function point to develop it, so if you take the number of work points, it is 216 into 5, or is the function point 216 divided by 0.2, which actually gives you 1083.5 man hours. And if the rate per man hour is 2000 rupees, then the total cost of development will be rupees 2.17 million. So 21.7 lakhs or 2.17 million rupees will be the total cost of developing this software based on the above calculations. Now, what are the benefits of the function point analysis? Now, because the function point analysis is independent of the language use, which means independent of the software language use, it is independent of the development platform, it can be used to identify the productivity benefits of one programming language over another, one development platform over another, one development methodology over another. It can also be used to understand one programming department over another, and before and after gains in using the programmer training, and so on and so forth. What are the key problems and criticisms of the function point analysis? The function point counts tend to be affected by the size of the project. It is difficult to apply function point analysis to large distributed systems or systems which have very complex internal processing like embedded technologies. Difficult to define logical files from physical files, which makes it difficult to understand the difference between the two and therefore estimate the difference in the effort required over here. The validity of the weights that Albrecht has established and the consistency of the application has been challenged. And different companies calculate the function points in a slightly different way, therefore making inter-company comparisons very difficult for the client to understand and estimate. So these are some of the pitfalls of the function point analysis. But in spite of all the pitfalls and in spite of all the drawbacks, the function point analysis remains a very popular method of estimating the effort required to develop a software solution and or in maintaining a already developed software solution. Now, let's go to the next sub-point under this, which is typically trying to estimate how to make estimate and what are estimating assumptions. Now, what is an estimate? An estimate is a qualified guess. Many books have coined, or sometimes you will hear the word called guesstimate being used instead of estimate. So, qualified guess is an estimate. Every estimate is based on certain assumptions. An estimated assumption is a statement which has been considered to be true in deriving the estimate. So, there are certain critical assumptions that the person who is making the estimate will make, bases his understanding of the job which has been done before. Now, these estimates or assumptions need to be specified so the basis of the estimate is known and the validity of the assumptions can be validated at each stage of the project or as time goes forward. Okay? For example, a work estimate is based on a level of skill and expertise. If the level of skill changes or if a lower level skill is used, then obviously, then the task will require far more effort in completing or in completion. Now, applying another thing that we have to do after the estimates are obtained is applying contingency. Now, what are contingencies? Now, contingencies are applied basically to counter the impact of unforeseen circumstances or things that parameters that we may have underestimated at the time of estimating the total project cost or the project effort. It therefore allows us to absorb the impact of dealing with unforeseen issues or sudden changes or complexities in completing this task or the stage of the software project. Now, typically, in applying the contingency, it is important to understand the level of uncertainty of the estimate and the level of risk. Higher the level of uncertainty of the estimate and higher the level of risk, higher is the contingency that has to be applied to mitigate the same. Now, for example, another factor that is very important in applying the contingency to estimate is the time that has been taken between when the estimate is produced and when the estimated task or stage is likely to be executed. So, for example, if there are four sequential stages to a project, then there is more uncertainty about the last stage at this point in time than the first stage, and hence the contingency for the last stage should be higher considering that it is far away in the implementation cycle. Now, we apply an increase to the estimate as a contingency in line with this uncertainty, risk and the length of time for execution. Normally, we apply the contingency as a percentage of the overall estimate. 10% is normally used as an average by most industry experts and most professionals in the industry as a method of trying to apply a contingency to the estimate. Now, recommended estimating principles, important principles of estimating. Number one, always obtain at least two estimates from two different sources or two different people. Number two, involve people who will be doing the work or people who have done the job before and who understand the complexities and the nuances of the job, thereby, improving the chances of a better estimate. Okay. Thirdly, use more than one estimating method. So, when you get estimates from two different people, ensure that they are using two different methods of estimating. Each estimate must be independently arrived and logged. Now, after that, we do the recommended. Then what we do is we review all the estimates that have been obtained. And rationalize the difference by mutual discussion. So, we come to a consensus on this. We document all the assumptions that are made so that they can be reviewed over a period of time and with how valid or invalid they are can be determined at every given point in time. Add contingency based on the level of uncertainty and risk. Typically, get an agreement and a commitment from the project team for their task estimates and also from the project sponsor for the overall project estimate. So, in this case, you must get a concurrence from the project team that will implement the project as well as the project sponsor who is sponsoring the project. Review and refine the estimates of the project as we progress and as actual data becomes available to us. So, we can always compare the actual versus the plan and actual versus the forecasted and keep revising the estimates as we go along or as we further progress. Now, let us go to the next activity under project management, which is typically called scheduling. Now, scheduling can only be done once the project has been broken down into individual tasks. Okay. Now, these tasks are determined from the work breakdown structure methodology, and we have a size and estimation of the task from the estimation process. The next step that we typically follow is scheduling. Now, the primary objectives of scheduling are that we should be able to do the thing in the best possible time, at the least possible cost, and at the least possible risk. So, these are the primary objectives with which the process of scheduling is undertaken, typically keeping in time the best cost, best time, least cost, and least risk. Then we have secondary objectives in the scheduling process, which typically look at evaluation of schedule alternatives. So you can make different schedule alternatives and see which is taking the lowest amount of time. Then we also look at scheduling alternatives that improve the optimization or make the effective use of all the resources. And thirdly, improves the communication between the project implementation team. Now let's look at some of the terms that are used in the scheduling methodology. The first term that we use is precedence. A task that must be completed or must occur before another task can start is said to have precedence over the other task. That's the first terminology. The second one is concurrence. Concurrent tasks are those that can occur at the same time or in parallel. Third one is lead and lag time. Now, lead time and lag time are typically delays between the different activities. The lead time is a delay before the start of the activity, and the lag time is the delay that is after the end of the activity. The third term is milestones. Now, milestones have a duration of zero. The objective is to identify critical points in the schedule and give a milestone review over there. Normally shown as an inverted triangle in the diagram, in a diagrammatic or graphical way. And milestones are used to review the process that has been done till that point in time and also the delivery time. Now, typically, the review may happen at the end or the beginning of a phase. For example, you can have a software requirement review or you can have a user sign-off review, and these milestones can be tied to contract terms and payment terms, you know, and the related payment terms. So you can actually improve your cash flow based on completion of every milestone in the project. Now, this is a typical milestone method depiction on the diagram. So if you see a software project, typically using the waterfall method of development, you have the software concept, you have the requirements gathering, and after the requirements gathering, you have over here what we call the first review, which is called the software requirements review. Now, once the software requirements review is done and the requirements are okay, this goes further into system analysis, and at the end of system analysis, we see the PDR, which is called the preliminary design review. Okay. Now, after the PDR is okay, the preliminary design review is okay, the analysis, what has been analyzed or what system analysis has been applied, goes for software design. Now, at the end of software design, we have critical design review. So, once the analysis is reviewed and cleared, and once the design is reviewed and cleared, then the process of coding and debugging starts. After the coding has been completed, there is a system testing that is done of the project, and this is the acceptance test review. So at this level, we have the ATR, which is the acceptance test review, and then once the system has been accepted, we have deployment and training. So this is how, deployment and maintenance along with training. So this is how typically the terminology is used in the milestones, so different kind of milestones that are there in the project. Now, coming further to this terminology, the next term that we will learn apart from lead and lag is the slack and float. Now, the slack and float are synonymous terms. We have free slack, which is an activity before it delays the next task. It is the size of the time. Or the available time that is available before it delays the next task. Then we have total slack, which is slack as an activity has in delaying the entire project. Okay. Now the slack time TS is defined as TL minus TE, where TE is the earliest time an event can take place and TL is the latest date it can occur without extending project completion dates and project deadlines. So this is how you calculate the total slack time. Then going further into scheduling techniques. So that was scheduling terminology. Now let's look at scheduling techniques. Now in scheduling techniques, we have mathematical methods and we have bar diagram, bar charts. So in the mathematical analysis, we have what are called network diagrams. The first one of the network diagram is called the PERT, which is Project Evaluation and Review Techniques. The second one is called CPM, which is called the Critical Path Method. The third one is called GRT, which is Graphical Evaluation and Review Techniques. In addition to that, we can do scheduling techniques using bar charts. Now, bar charts will use the milestone chart to determine the progress of the report. And then you have a Gantt chart, which is another method by which you can depict the complete schedule of the project. Now, network, so this is how scheduling techniques are, mathematical and bar chart types. Now, let us look at the network diagrams. The network diagrams were first developed in the 1950s, and it was a graphical representation or a diagrammatical representation of the tasks that were necessary to complete a project or the process that was involved in delivering the complete project to the customer. Now, it visualizes the flow of tasks and the interrelationship between them and the dependencies between them. Now, in the mathematical analysis, the network diagrams were used for PERT, Program Evaluation and Review Technique, as well as for CPM, Critical Path Method. Sometimes these are treated synonymously. Therefore, you will see in today's time many people taking the term PERT CPM together, because many people use it synonymously. And there are all our models using different network diagrams. So one of the methods of representing a project is using a software called Microsoft Projects. Now, in the Microsoft project, you can actually generate a complete network diagram, sequencing the project from one step to the next, and also identifying critical, the review, the project review or the milestone review parameters. So, this is typically MS Projects. Then, network diagrams follow two classic formats. One is called AOA, which is activity on the arrow. As the name suggests, the activity that is being done is put on the arrow. The other one is called AON, which is activity on the node. So you have a node which is a square box, and you put the activity in the node, and then you have an arrow which takes you to the next box or the next step of the process. So these are the two methods which we can use, the AOA, activity on arrow, and activity on node. Now, each task in the network diagram is labeled with an identifier, which is usually a letter or a code, and a duration in standard days, like in standard units like days or hours or man hours or weeks, etc. There are other variations of labeling. There is one for start and one for end event, and time goes typically from left to right in a network diagram. So, how does the time proceed? From left to right or from top to bottom if you are doing it vertically. Now, this is how a node format looks like. So, if you see the first one, activity on arrow. So, here is the activity. So, this is the start of the project, which is step number one. What is the step called? It is design user interface. This is going to take 15 days. And then after this design is done, step number two is to build the user interface. So, you have build UI written on the arrow with the time written on top in terms of days. The other alternative way of doing it is we have the arrow which says activity A and 15, activity B and 12, comma 12. So, A could be design the design, and you can give a key which is what is A, B, C, D and E. So, A is design the user interface, B is build the user interface. So, this is how you will typically look at activity on arrow of a node format. Let us look at activity on node. Now, if you see an activity on node, this is the node which is the square box, and this is another node which is another square box. So, in this node, you will put the activity which is called design the user interface, and on the arrow, you will mention the timelines, which means The designing the user interface is going to take 15 man days, and build the next step, which is building the user interface, will take another 12 man days. So this is how we understand the diagram as activity on arrow or activity on node. Now, activity on arrow consists of circles which represents the events, such as start or end or the sequence in which the events are going. Line represents the task, which means whatever you want to do as a task has to appear on the line, and things being, or typically the things being done, for example, build user interface, or you know, test the user interface. So this is typically also called the arrow diagramming method. Okay, it is called the arrow diagramming method. Then you have the second type of network diagram that we discussed, which is the arrow on network. Activity on node. My apologies. This is activity on node. Now, tasks are on the node. Now, nodes can be either circles or rectangles, and the task information is written into the node. Arrows are showing dependency between tasks from one to the next. So, this is also called the precedence diagrammatic method, or the precedence diagramming method. So, this AON is also called the precedence diagramming method.